Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, you know, a lot of times we get a little bit frustrated by what we see from the fiscal side of things on Capitol Hill in the White House, and rightly so. And we still may very well be extremely disappointed on how different issues are dealt with. And the one coming up the soonest on a major scale is the debt ceiling vote. John Boehner, the House Speaker, up at the Economic Club of New York giving a major speech on Monday night. And while obviously the rubber still has to meet the road, based on some of what he had to say, including this on Monday night, I think we have reason to be encouraged.
Without significant spending cuts and changes in the way we spend the American people's money, there will be no increase in the debt limit. And the cuts should be greater than the accompanying increase in the debt limit that the president has given. We're not talking about billions here. We should be talking about cuts in trillions if we're serious about addressing America's fiscal problems.
Now, Jim, he also talked about how everything was on the table except tax hikes. He also talked about how there needed to be specific cuts, not just some broad deficit reduction plan left for the next Congress or the next generation. You're always going to have folks that are out there saying that under no circumstances should the debt ceiling ever be raised. And to some extent, they have a point, given the revenues that we have on hand in the very short term. But the fact that Boehner's getting specific and he's being pretty aggressive out there, I think, is a good sign.
Yeah, and also there's a little bit of speaking truth to power, to use one of the left's tired and hackneyed phrases, but one that actually applies here. James Pithakakis has written in The Corner, and he's probably one of my favorite writers on topics of business, economics, and budget matters. And he was noting that, you know, for all of the perception that that Wall Street types are right-wing Republicans, they're really not interested in spending cuts. And they're not terribly worried about high taxation, because generally they can hire very good accountants and all kinds of lawyers, and they can find every conceivable loophole, et cetera. They want Washington to be on a smooth sailing. And the path of least resistance is to raise the debt ceiling again. And that was very much not what people in that room wanted to hear last night. So I applaud Boehner for, you know, having the courage to say that. The interesting thing is, over on Campaign Spot, I've noted there's a poll done by the folks at Resurgent Republic. And, you know, Greg, try to guess what percentage of the public believes that they should not raise the debt ceiling without limiting spending.
Quite high, I would imagine. Maybe even 50 or higher.
89%. Only 11% of voters say you should raise the debt ceiling with no preconditions. Only 18% of Democrats are in that category. So not only do most people say, all right, raise the debt limit, but also make sure you're going to have lots of spending cuts and a commitment to reduce the deficit. The next option is don't raise the debt limit under any circumstances. Boehner has public opinion on this side. I hope he negotiates like it. I hope they draw a hard bargain on this. And again, I think it's kind of interesting that when cases like this happen, which the Wall Street types are not on board with what you and I would consider to be true economic conservatism, true free market, true wise budgeting, I hope this would be the widely observed, and the idea that Wall Street is not a synonym for conservatism, and that Republicans and Wall Street are not always on the same page. You know, I very often folks on Wall Street are good folks, but every once in a while they want policy changes that are not in the national interest. And I think raising the debt ceiling very much fits in that category. And I think these fights are good for conservatism and good for the country.
Yeah, I think there has been a misnomer out there about the GOP and Wall Street being linked arm in arm. The fact that the GOP opposed the financial reform bill and some other things in the previous Congress wasn't because they're in love with Wall Street, because Wall Street deserves a huge share of the blame for the financial crisis. It's just that they didn't want a massive expansion of government as the solution to that, because it wouldn't be the solution. On to number two now, and Jim, you've been following this story pretty closely. Yesterday, we saw a brand new senator from the state of Nevada, previously Congressman Dean Heller, taking over for John Ensign, who resigned in disgrace, unfortunately, but appropriately so. I think a lot of people would agree. So now Heller is gearing up to win a full term in 2012 in that state. And now there's a special election on the docket for September for his House seat that he had to vacate to join the Senate. And this, of course, will be a potential free-for-all. And it's really a free-for-all based on what you've learned about some of the strange decisions the Secretary of State's made out there.
Yeah, and I would just point out that House Republicans are just learning to dread special elections. We all remember the name Dede Scozzafasa. And just they tend to go the worst possible way for Republicans lately, even though there's been an upswing for Republicans over the last 2 years. Well, in this case, the Secretary of State of Nevada, a Democrat, decided that the his interpretation of Nevada law is that there should be what's almost literally nicknamed a free-for-all election, meaning that there is no primary. Parties do not select their nominees, as happened up in New York with Didi Scosafaza, that basically anybody who files the fee and submits, I believe, 100 signatures or some astonishingly low level is on the ballot. So the ballot is going to have an enormous number of folks. Every gadfly in the world is going to come out. But what's even more, for Republicans, this is a pretty Republican-leaning district. Basically, picture everything in Nevada outside of Las Vegas, and you have an idea of what this district is. It's got Reno. It's got Carson City. It's got the whorehouses. It's got Area 51. It's got nuclear test sites. It's got all kinds of stuff in it. So in this, you know, in this, you know, huge district with lots of Republicans in it, you've got no less than four major candidates. Some probably familiar to listeners of this podcast, Sharon Engel, you probably remember from the Nevada Senate race last year. Kirk Lippold, who was the commander of the USS Cole when it was attacked by Al-Qaeda. The state party chairman, Mark Amodai, I believe is the pronunciation of his name, and state senator Greg Brower. And oh, by the way, the lieutenant governor was thinking about it for a while and he pulled out. So you've got at least four major Republicans. Three Democrats, but one is pretty well known, and the other two aren't so as well known. So, and basically, the rules are whoever gets the most votes wins. So, with a whole lot of candidates, the winner might only need 25%, 20%, 50%. You know, we don't know what it's going to be. We don't know how widely it's going to split. But Washington Republicans are very nervous about this, and they probably should be. Because at this point, you know, it really is anybody's guess, and it depends on who turns out. And once again, there is no primary process. Now, the state party is suing. They believe that they should have the right to nominate one person. Unfortunately, in this case, it would be selected by the party bosses of the Central Committee of the Nevada Republican Party, and I can see that not sitting well with a lot of grassroots supporters. With these four major candidates, you pick one of them, the supporters of the other three are going to be pretty darn PO'd. So Republicans need to coalesce behind one candidate. How you do that is not quite clear right now. Hopefully there'll be some debates, and hopefully you'll see somebody break out of the pack and become the front runner. Because otherwise, it's very possible that Democrats will end up winning a seat in what should be a pretty safe Republican territory.
Well, Jim, I don't know how long it takes to establish residency in Nevada to make you eligible to run, but this all smacks of the California recall. And since Schwarzenegger's out of office now, if he's looking for something else to do, I guess he can move to Nevada 3 and throw his hat in the ring, because he's pretty good at these circus-type elections. Not sure if that
it is. And as I said, with Area 51, at this point, I'd like to see the birth certificates of all candidates, just to prove that they're human, not merely that they're Americans, no little green men end up sneaking up on the ballot or something like that.
Exactly. Speaking of somebody else who might show up on the ballot once again, and Newt Gingrich has announced that he's going to announce that he's running for president. The official announcement coming Wednesday. This is a guy who was obviously Speaker of the House, one of the most powerful people in the nation about 15 years ago. He's toyed with this in the past, but now he's officially getting in. I've even heard on the radio today, Jim, that over the weekends he's being tutored in Spanish so he can address, I guess, immigration issues, trying to win the Latino vote, maybe address some other issues that speaking Spanish would help on. So apparently that's the sign that Newt Gingrich is jumping in whole hog here.
You know, I am kind of struck by the awkwardness of this era of social media. Newt Gingrich announced on Twitter Monday that he'd be announcing on Wednesday that he's running for president. Now, I don't know about you, Greg, but at that point, I feel like, well, you've just announced it. Spoiler alert, he's running. You know, it's kind of fascinating to watch the reaction to this. I think a lot of Republicans who have been Newt Gingrich fans over the years are not as enthusiastic as they once would have been. It's kind of interesting that starting tomorrow, with the official announcement, it'll be the first time in his life that Newt Gingrich is officially running for president. And yet, because he's had this very high-profile role in Republican politics for 17 years, he's been mentioned as a potential candidate for the better part of two decades. So before he gets official, I think a lot of folks feel like they already know him, and kind of almost, you know, there's kind of a, well, what's new, and a little more excitement around some of the fresh faces. Now, I saw him speak at the NRA convention. I've seen him speak at CPAC. Newt still knows how to give a good speech. He still knows how to, you know, fire up the base. So, you know, not the most outrageous long shot bid we've ever seen. I do kind of wonder if a couple phrases in Spanish are really going to make that much of a difference on the margins. You know, my favorite Spanish is dos palomas, por favor, but that's what I found particularly useful in Mexico. It's very early in this process, and I suppose anything could happen, but certainly this kind of a sense that this is not the Newt Gingrich at the apex of his political influence and career.
Yeah, I think there's a weariness there, and obviously there's many concerns among the conservative base of the party about his more than slightly checkered personal history. He's going to have to answer for that. He's already started to, or at least tried to start to. I think he's a guy who's going to have a hard time finding traction here, because when you look at the candidates that Republican voters have chosen in the last cycle and seem to be warming up to in this cycle, it's not the ones that have been around forever. They're looking for some fresh faces, fresh ideas, because they see people who have been around a long time as just more of the same. And given our fiscal situation, which we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, it's clear that a lot of people want something different, because more of the same isn't going to cut it. And it's almost even more ridiculous to see the New York Times getting on its moral high horse. Didn't even know they had a low moral horse, much less a high horse. But you were telling me before we started here that their story today on Newt Gingrich's impending announcement started with an explanation of his wife telling her friends back when they were having an affair who she was having an affair with.
Precisely. The very first sentence is, Calista Bissek's friends from rural Wisconsin were stunned when, well over a decade ago, she confided that she was secretly dating an older married man, Newt Gingrich. Page A1, welcome to the race, Newt. You know, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. I'm sure this is the same investigative team they put on the John McCain affair rumors. It just kind of it's kind of revealing that the first thing they feel the need to put the spotlight on is Newt Gingrich's infidelities. Having said that, there are a lot of Republican voters for which this entire, you know, Newt's behavior in this area gives them the willies and just creeps them out. It's not ideal, but I think it's just kind of interesting to see the New York Times just decide to slam him right out of the gate before the official announcement. So good luck, Newt.
We should almost start a pool to see what the New York Times opening sentence will be in the other nominees or other people get in the race. Trying to shake off his Massachusetts health care plan, Mitt Romney plans to say today that he's joining the 2012 field, or shaking off his lack of charisma, Tim Pawlenty today announcing that he's going to get in. So basically bringing up everybody's most likely
Achilles heel in the very first sentence. Yeah, that would be standard for the New York Times.
Oh, it's going to be a long year and a half. Jim, we look forward to it, though. Talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.